facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome and a terrific Tuesday to you. 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free number to call. It's The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 1-888-914-9149. You can also tweet at me. My Twitter handle is at Cale Clark. You can follow me there at C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And we have a show account as well at Cale Clark Show. And of course, the email address is always there, cale@relevantradio.com. Well, of course, we're almost halfway through Lent now. And one of the big topics in Lent is obviously death, not only the death of our Lord, but also dying to self and just dealing with this whole concept of picking up one's cross and being willing to give one's life. And I read an interesting article in The Atlantic magazine that was written by Tim Keller. Now, Tim Keller is a Presbyterian pastor. You say, well, why are you bringing him up? Well, he may not be Catholic, but he's got some interesting insights on how to reach the current secular generation. He started this Presbyterian congregation in New York City, and it grew from nothing to over 5,000 people. A lot of the people that go there are young adults in their 20s and 30s, young professionals, who come from a secular background, and he's been able to reach their hearts and minds to consider the claims of Christ. Now, obviously, it'd be great if he got some insight into the church founded by Jesus, the Catholic Church. And hey, Tim, you know, you're welcome to join us. It's Catholic, it's universal, it's for everybody. So consider that. But he's really good at reaching the culture, and that's why this article really caught my eye, because he had to face death himself, and he realized that his faith wasn't quite up to the challenge, and it needed a bit of work. And that was really an interesting revelation for him and for me, too, reading this article. And he starts off by saying that he spent most of his life as a Protestant minister, in part ministering to people who were dying. And in fact, he says he sat at countless bedsides of people who were on their last days on planet Earth, and many times watch people take their final breaths. And in fact, he actually recently wrote a book called On Death, a small book about dying. And it actually was filled with some of the things that he used to say to people, and maybe still does say to these people, at times like that when they're getting ready to leave this world. But interestingly enough, just about a month after that book was published last year, he was diagnosed himself with pancreatic cancer. He was on the way home from a conference in Asia in Kuala Lumpur in February, just before the pandemic hit of 2020. And he had an intestinal infection, and he went to the hospital, and a scan showed large lymph nodes and large lymph nodes in his abdomen. And it didn't seem too concerning at the time, but he was told by the doctors to come back in 3 months just to check. His book On Death was then published. And while he was, you know, along with everybody else in New York City and everybody else in the United States and around the world trying to protect themselves from COVID-19, he found out from his doctors that his test results were not what he was hoping for. And he had, as he put it, an agent of death growing inside of him. I wonder if you've ever had a terminal diagnosis and survived it. And how did that affect your faith? 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call on The Cale Clark Show. Let me know. As far as Tim Keller goes, he started going online, playing Google Doctor, looking at the very dire survival statistics for people who have pancreatic cancer. And while he was doing this, he was on the computer, he saw on a table nearby a copy of his own book, On Death. And he was like, I do not want to read that. Even though I wrote it, the last thing I want to do is read what I have written about preparing for death. In a sense, he was in denial that this could happen to him. And he was about to turn 70 years old, along with his wife, Kathy, but they felt very, up until that point, they were feeling quite healthy, clear-minded, lots of energy. They didn't seem like they felt too much different than they had over the last 50 years. Lots of plans for the future, children, grandchildren. Life was going really well. And when this illness hit him, pancreatic cancer, Tim Keller started asking himself, why now? Not yet. This can't be. What is God doing here? And so he started echoing these cries from the Psalms and making them his own. Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Wake up, O Lord, why are you sleeping? How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? And he wrote in the Atlantic, he said, quote, a significant number of believers in God find their faith shaken or destroyed when they learn that they will die at a time and in a way that seems unfair to them. End of quote. It seems like this can't be the plan. And before he was diagnosed with cancer himself, he says he had seen this a lot in a lot of people from different backgrounds, even people of other faiths or people of no faith at all. And he recalled one woman who had cancer telling him years ago, I'm not a believer anymore. That doesn't work for me because I can't believe in a personal God who would do something like this to me. I can't believe in a God that would allow me to go through this. That's an interesting perspective. And as he writes, cancer killed her God, in a sense. Cancer killed God for her. She couldn't possibly conceive that a God would allow her to suffer. And so one of the first things that Tim Keller learned was that, as he was going through his health crisis, was that religious faith doesn't necessarily provide you with comfort when you're going through a crisis. You might have a firm belief intellectually in the afterlife, in the resurrection, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to strengthen you in the moment as you're going through it. And of course, rationally, he knew, just as we all know rationally, we are going to die someday. He had this visceral reaction to being told that he had very, very serious cancer. And instead of thinking maybe along the lines of the poet Dylan Thomas, who said, rage, rage against the dying of the light, he started saying, I can't die. That happens to other people, not to me. And he said those words out loud, and he realized how ridiculous they sounded and how deluded he had been about how his faith was actually impacting his life. And so this denial of death is always with us. And he quotes a 16th century theologian who talks about, even back, you know, hundreds of years ago, when people see a dead body, they start to philosophize maybe about the meaning of life, the brevity of life. It's so fleeting. But as soon as we turn away from the sight, as soon as we turn away from the grave, we start thinking again that we ourselves cannot die, that we're going to be perpetually there. And so we do know death as an abstraction, as something that is true. We know it's going to happen intellectually in our minds, but we can't imagine it as a personal reality. So I want to hear from you. Have you been through this? Have you been through a very serious diagnosis facing death and come back from that? And how did that affect your faith? You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to go to the phones right now. We've got a call from Edith in Chandler, Arizona. Edith, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, it's very exciting because I think there are a lot of people listening that know me. And they know that I was 45 years old and I was diagnosed with myeloma. Mm-hmm. Myoplastic leukemia. And I had about a 20% chance of surviving. I had just become Catholic about 2 years before.
Wow.
And, well, it just hit me that, no, it's not going to happen. I had people all around me that were supporting me. There was prayer that was said everywhere. They went to all the Marian sites and prayed for me. Well, here I am 30 years later. And wow. I just love people. God
bless
just showed me how everybody needs somebody. And it was so exciting because we lived in California and there was an earthquake and nobody was allowed to touch me. But my husband reached for the bed because he knew I was so afraid. And that touch was life-giving. It was like electricity went through my body. And I've never reacted any different now with people. I've become a hugger. I just have to hug people and let them know how important they are.
Mm, absolutely. Well, Edith, thank you very much for that call. And that's incredible that you were able to come back from that. And leukemia is a very serious disease, obviously. I had a really close friend who almost died from it. He was looking in very, very rough shape. His name was David. I remember visiting him in the hospital, and he made it back too, and he's fully healthy, father of young children, and I'm so glad for him. But yeah, that is a very, very grave diagnosis, to be sure. And it's so fantastic that you've been able to... Now, the fact that you've survived and you're able to share God's love with others in a new way, maybe, is really inspiring. So thanks very much for that call, Edith. Really, really appreciate that. And yeah, and
my
so this
husband
is...
came down with brain cancer, and I was alive to help him through it. And after he died, I got breast cancer.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's just ongoing. Well, I'm glad to have it and offer it up to God.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And you've obviously experienced a lot of suffering in your life that you can offer up. And thank you very much for that call, Edith. I really, really appreciate you. Thanks for calling in. That's Edith calling from Chandler, Arizona. And yeah, so Tim Keller, in this article in The Atlantic, talks about his own very serious cancer diagnosis, pancreatic cancer. And one of the things he was saying was that our beliefs about God and about the afterlife very often can be abstractions till the rubber meets the road. You get this serious diagnosis and you realize your own mortality, and they've got to go from being an abstraction to being real. It can't be just a mental ascent. It can't be just like watching a movie or a play, a battle to the death, and you know you're going to walk away from it. You're going to leave the theater at the end, but when it becomes real and you're living through it, man, that's where it goes from the theoretical to it has to become a life-gripping truth. And so it's interesting too, like obviously Tim Keller in his pastoral work worked a lot with secular people, agnostics, atheists, and one of the interesting things he mentions in the article is that a lot of people who come from that background, they think that their non-belief in God is going to help them when they're facing death, and that facade is cruelly stripped away as well. And he talks about this one particular person who had this set of beliefs about the universe, that the material world came into being on its own, there is no God, there is no supernatural world we go to after death, that after we die, it's simply ceasing to exist. As the writer Julian Barnes argued, nothing to be frightened of. Well, what he found was with this person, with a lot of people think like that, when they're confronted by the reality of their own impending death, that does not comfort them at all. And they are looking for something more. So he says, really, you've got to do two things to prepare yourself for this. And he had to go through it himself. He had to do what he called head work and heart work, intellectual engagement and emotional engagement as well, to really, really revitalize his faith. And he really learned a lot of great lessons from it in the face of his diagnosis. So now he talks about the terms head work, heart work, to talk about reasoning, using your mind, but also your feelings. These are not really independent in the Bible. In the Hebrew Bible, in the Old Testament, it talks about the heart as being actually very connected to the mind, to your will, to your emotions. The book of Proverbs tells us, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. So it needs more than rational conviction about the truth, a set of intellectual, I guess, facts, if you will. You need more than that to change. You need to take these things and put them rooted in your heart. And it's often that 18-inch distance from head to heart that's really the longest journey in the world at some level. So here's the head work that he did. And it was really reframing suffering. And that, yes, it can happen to you. And in a sense, why shouldn't it happen to you? He talks about Paul Brand, who is an orthopedic surgeon who actually spent the first part of his medical career in India and then later practiced medicine in the United States. And he said this. Paul Brand said, in the United States, he encountered a society that tries to avoid pain at all costs. Patients are living at a greater comfort level than almost anywhere else in the world, but they seem far less equipped to handle suffering, and they're far more traumatized by suffering when it happens to them. And so Keller asks the question, why is it that people in prosperous modern societies seem to struggle so much with the existence of suffering? The philosopher Charles Taylor wrote that while humans always have struggled with the ways of God, the justice of God, it was only in recent years that people started to think suffering, the existence of suffering, makes the existence of God implausible. In other words, if suffering exists, there can't be a God. Nobody ever thought that until the modern age. And that's a really important point. This modern assumption that we all deserve a comfortable life, and if there is any suffering, wow, God must not exist. And another thing that Charles Taylor, the philosopher, said was that just because we can't imagine a good reason for suffering to exist doesn't mean that there isn't a good reason for suffering to exist. So this is, we might have to wrap our brains around this a little bit. And Tim Keller puts it this way. He says, if there's a God great enough to merit your anger over suffering, either the suffering of others that you witness or the suffering that you're enduring personally, if there is a God who's great enough that you're going to get angry at him because of the suffering, then guess what? God is also great enough to maybe have reasons for allowing that suffering that you can't figure out. Let God be God in a certain sense. He says it's not logical to believe in an infinite, almighty creator God, but yet still be convinced that you are right about the, you know, what kind of evil he should allow, or how much suffering should he allow. How can you be the corrector of God, if you will? How can you grow angry that God doesn't see things your way? So the point of Charles Taylor is that people say their suffering makes faith in God impossible. But in reality, what's really going on here is that they have an overconfidence in themselves and their own understanding of the situation. And that sets them up for being angry, confused, very often fearful when they face suffering. So when Keller got diagnosed with cancer, Tim Keller, he had to not only look at what he believed, but at his understanding of God. Was his understanding of God too shaped by the culture around him? Had he, and this is something that can happen to all of us. We live in this secular environment, and in some ways we're like the proverbial frog in a pot of boiling water. We don't know how hot it's getting. And he asked the question, had I been slipping unconsciously into supposing that God actually lived for me rather than me for him? That life should automatically go well for me. I know better than God how things should go. And he had to admit, yeah, that is how I was thinking to some degree. So he found it a little bit freeing to be able to pray, maybe in a new, fresh way, thy will be done. Thy will be done. It's painful to say that sometimes because what might be happening here is not necessarily what I want, but it can, in the end, be very, very liberating. And then in terms of another area of work, sort of on the intellectual plane, the head work that he was doing to try to deal with this had to do with Jesus' resurrection. And he had actually been working on a book about Easter before being diagnosed with cancer. And at this point, the resurrection, although he believed in it, it had been mostly theoretical for him. But now, it's different. It's different. And so, how do I know that this really happened? Is this like believing in the flying spaghetti monster? Or did this really happen in history? And he talks about the work on the resurrection by the scholar N.T. Wright, a British scholar, and I have that book. It's called The Resurrection of the Son of God. It's probably the most comprehensive work on the resurrection to date. It's about 800 pages long, and he lays out a very, very solid historical case for the resurrection of Jesus, the bodily resurrection of Jesus from the dead. And he started reading this book by N.T. Wright. He'd read it before, but now he read it again. And he tried to read it with an even more skeptical eye than he had before, because now he is facing death. He needs to know, are these things true? And he came to the conclusion that, yeah, this did happen. And in fact, the arguments for the resurrection seem even more fair than they had to him in the past. But it takes more. It takes much more than just intellectual work. Okay, knowing the facts about the resurrection, knowing the facts about the existence of God, the afterlife, you also need to be touched at the level of the heart. And that's the next thing that he had to discover. So we're going to take a quick break right now. We're going to talk when we come back about the heart work that you need to do to deal with suffering, to deal with facing death, and come out on the other side with a stronger faith.
I think it was St. Paul who set the record for the longest homily ever. It might have been 10 hours.
Where sin abounds, grace abounds more.
Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 18th Lenten lesson on the Mass. That's right, the homily lasted all night long, and it took place in Troas. And a young man named Eutychus fell asleep during the homily, tumbled out of a third-story window where he was sitting on the windowsill, and died. St. Paul resuscitated him, and then continued the rest of his homily until dawn. True story. You can read it for yourself in the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 20. These days, Pope Francis encourages us to speak concisely, say much in few words. Homilies should be related to the readings of the Mass and be clear, concise, convincing, and inspiring. But more important than the preparation of the homily is the preparation of the homilist. So please don't forget to pray for your priests.
One of the three pillars of Lent is prayer. So make this your best Lent yet by joining Father Rocky for the Family Rosary Across America every evening at 7 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. 1-888-914-9149 on this Tuesday, March the 9th, 2021. We're talking about a recent article in The Atlantic magazine by Tim Keller about how his faith had to become really, in a sense, more real to him when he was facing a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer. Very, very grave, to be sure. And how his faith had to go from a purely intellectual look at the world to something that really touched the heart as well. And I asked you to call in if you had an experience of facing death and how that impacted your own Catholic faith. We're going to go to the phones right now. Jeremy is on the line from Minnesota. Jeremy, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in.
I thought it was important to share. But last year, June, I got diagnosed with a stage 4 lung cancer.
Wow.
Which came kind of as a shock because I never smoked.
Oh, my goodness.
At the time, I'm 46. Now I'm 47. Mm-hmm. They found that it was, I had about a baseball-sized tumor in my right lung, and I started getting tumors in my left lung. I also had about a baseball-sized tumor in my pelvis.
Oh, my goodness.
Tumors in my ribs, tumors in my lymph nodes, tumors in my brain, and in my spine.
So it spread everywhere.
Stage 4. Asked the doctor. I've always been an optimistic person. Mm-hmm. But kind of asked, well, what? it sounds pretty bad. And she goes, yeah, it is. And I go, well, how long might I have? And she goes, anywhere between 6 to 8 months, probably, possibly. And it could be longer. It could be a couple of years if we get on it. Mm-hmm. And I believed that everybody's like, oh, my God, how terrible this is. And I'm like, no, this is God's plan. Mm-hmm. I think it's God's way of testing me for all the stuff I got. If people ask me, how are you doing? I am always saying, living the dream. And I always say, yes. But the thing, long story is I've been extremely blessed with the best parents I could ever ask for.
Wow.
I got two kids that are just out of this world. I love my wife. I live in a great country. I couldn't ask for better. Mm. It's like winning the lottery. And most important of all, I got God and Jesus in my life.
Wow.
So with that said and done, I told everybody, God's got a plan. And the way I look at it is he's probably testing me on all the things he blessed me for. Mm. And to see how willing I am to fight for these blessings. And if I'm wrong and he so well pulls my number, then he can tell me that I was wrong when I go up there and talk to him. But if I'm right, I'm going to fight tooth and nail. And I told my doctors, don't give up on me no matter what. I'm going to be the most positive, happy-go-lucky person you'll ever see. But just do whatever you need.
That's incredible. Incredible
now,
attitude, Jeremy.
Now, after all said and done, the tumor that was in my pelvis that was creating tons of pain is completely gone. After being on an inhibitor, they said that within 3 months' time, my progress is what they normally wouldn't see for up to about a year. I've been on tons of prayer groups, have been praying for me. And like I said, when I found out this information, I just said, God, you got a plan. And I hope me beating this is your plan. But if it's not, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. So to be honest, this radio station, this is the first time I heard it. And within 3 minutes, you said, call about this. And so I thought, wow, this must be a sign that I should tell people of my scenario and my fortune and all that. The tumors in my brain are almost all gone. Other one is growing slightly, but
In the lung? In the lung?
The lung, it was, I think they said 6.9 centimeters by 6.4, so it's a little larger than a fist. And the thing is after 3 months, the PET scan showed that it got dwarfed down to 4.7 by 2.4.
Wow. This is an incredible story, Jeremy. And, you know, I'm so glad that you called in, because this is incredibly encouraging to people, because your attitude in the face of this is not one that a lot of people would have, I don't think. And what really came to mind when you were talking was Psalm 103, you know, when the psalmist says, you know, bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. Your attitude of positivity and thankfulness to God for all your blessings, despite the diagnosis, is something that, I mean, we always want to go to the worst case scenario, I think, naturally. So for you to do that, I think, shows a lot of spiritual maturity. And I think this is really encouraging for people, especially other people who are struggling with illness right now, who are listening to you right now, Jeremy. So I really appreciate that. And that's encouraging to me. Your faith is definitely something that inspires me. So I'm so glad that you took the time to call in, Jeremy.
Well, thank you very much. And like I said, I firmly believe God has a plan. And just put your faith in him and don't question it. But do what you think or what you can do is the best. I mean, and at the end of the day, I tell my kids, I got a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. Life is about attitude. Mm. And if you have a negative attitude, you're going to make life tougher. And I truly
believe
that.
That's very true. Yeah, it's very true. We can't always choose what happens to us, but we can certainly choose how we're going to respond to it in faith and with a positive attitude and doing what we can do and leaving it in God's hands. And I think you're a great example of that, Jeremy. So I really appreciate the call, and may God bless you. And I'm sure that everyone listening right now across the country and around the world on Relevant Radio is going to be praying for you as well, Jeremy. So may God bless you and your family.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling in. That was Jeremy calling from Minnesota. Wow, what a powerful story. That is incredible. And so if you're encouraged by that, if you want to call in, share your story, 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. Wow, that is, what a faith perspective there. And this is what Tim Keller was talking about when he says that you've really got to engage the heart as well. You got to engage the whole person. And this is really the mindset of the person in the Hebrew Bible, that we're a unity of body and soul. And so I do think there is something to, God doesn't always heal our bodies, but he always wants to bring spiritual wholeness, healing, forgiveness, and hope. And he will, of course, ultimately heal all of our bodies at the resurrection on the last day. It is true that we do have to taste death, unless we happen to be alive when the Lord returns and our bodies are just transformed, as St. Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians. And we just get translated or transformed into this resurrection body. But he will raise our bodies from the sleep of death as well. And that's part of his promise to us. And so, yes, to engage the heart is very, very important. And this is the difference between, as the American philosopher Jonathan Edwards once said, it's one thing to believe that honey is sweet, but it's another to actually taste the sweetness of honey. We've got to taste and see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. We've got to experience, as the psalmist says, the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. And that could be through healing, as Jeremy is experiencing, at least at some level. The cancer is shrinking. That's incredibly positive news for him. But even his goodness in the suffering that doesn't result in healing, because it doesn't always shake down that way. And of course, many of you know this because you're experiencing the death of a loved one, perhaps your own terminal diagnosis. And so we have to hold on to faith and hope in those situations as well. And we're going to go right now to Debbie in Massachusetts. Debbie is on the line right now with a story of her own. And Debbie, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in. How are you?
Hello, Kiel. Thank you for taking my call and welcome to Relevant Radio.
Thank you.
Back in 2016, we lost our nephew. He was on doing a memorial ride for his with his friends, and a man who was driving a stolen vehicle had hit him and left the scene, causing my nephew to fly from the windshield at a high impact, and he was basically dead at the scene. The people that were with his at the memorial memorial ride with him, stayed with him. The ambulance came. They rode to the hospital behind the ambulance. My sister was called, and she didn't know that he belonged to a motorcycle group, and they were with her after she had to identify his body. She is a nurse of aid, so she knows firsthand the trauma that had happened to his son. And it changed our family. It changed those people that were with him that night. The trial, the man, his friend said that he saw his son flying through the air, and that just impacted him. I'm just grateful that he wasn't alone, that he was with his friends. And
you became a mother figure to his friends, did you not, at some level?
Yes. After he passed away, they've had these people were with him that night. They call her Mama Sue. They call her Mama Sue. She, over the years, she was worried about Craig, but hearing the stories of what a good friend he was and all the good that he did, they gave her all the pictures that they had of him with the memorial service. Wow. And in our family, my sister was always like a mother figure to me, because our mother was ill, and she kind of stepped up and helped mother me, because I'm the youngest of four children.
Okay.
And it was hard. It's hard to see her so broken and hurting, and I didn't know how to help her, but being a believer, it kind of gives me a different view than just because when we first at Easter after it happened. I was going to the station to the cross, and when I saw Mary, when they took Mary down, excuse me, when they gave Jesus mm-hmm. Mary when she was taken off the cross. Wow. And wow, she gathered him into his hands. And I automatically thought of that night when, you know, my sister was able that prayed to herself, even though he was already passed away. But, yes, it changed our family.
Absolutely.
But I don't want to say I can see the fruit of it, but I want to say yes.
Certainly, let me jump in there, Debbie. Yeah, it's certainly your sister can relate to Mother Mary and having to experience the death of her son at that level. Hopefully, you know, that is a comfort to her. Wow, what a terrible thing to have to go through. And I'm so sorry for the loss that you and your family and your sister experienced. And wow, that's just terrible. Thank you for calling in, Debbie, and may God bless you. And certainly all the listeners, I'm going to ask you to pray for Debbie and her sister Sue, as they still, I mean, you never get over these types of losses, to be sure, but our faith can help us as we grieve. We don't grieve as people who have no hope, as the New Testament tells us. We do believe in the resurrection, the afterlife, as a certainty, because Jesus has promised it to us, and he has risen from the dead to verify his teaching. And we're going to be right back on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We're talking about this article by Tim Keller in the Atlantic Magazine, Growing My Faith in the Face of Death, and the importance of not just believing in the resurrection of Jesus, the afterlife in the abstract, but for it to touch the heart as well as, of course, the head. And he talks about St. Thomas Aquinas and his experience that happened on December the 6th in the year 1273. And Thomas Aquinas on that day, he stopped writing his famous Summa Theologiae. And his friend Reginald asked him, why? Why did you stop? And of course, Thomas replied that he had this supernatural experience of God, this beatific vision. And exactly how this shook down, what that was like for him, we can't say for sure, but Thomas did say that after what he saw, all of his theology seemed like straw by comparison. And this is one of the, if not the smartest guy of all time in the history of the church, he was right up there, top three for sure. And the fact that he had this experience that made everything he wrote seem like nothing, that didn't mean that his theology was bad or somehow inadequate. But as Tim Keller says, Thomas had now seen the difference between having a map of God and a map of eternity and God himself. It's the difference between an intellectual knowledge of God and an experiential knowledge of God. And what a difference it is. And Tim Keller has had this kind of experience now. His experience of God in the everyday, he hasn't had a kind of supernatural beatific vision, but the way he experiences God in the everyday, in the ordinary, he just appreciates it so much more now that he's had this experience of facing death. And I wonder if the same has happened to you. 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to go to the phones right now. James is calling from Long Beach, California. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing? I'm just like to say I've been listening to this show for a long time, and I've been listening to your show when I come home from work, and really appreciate it. It's really helped me out a lot.
Oh, thanks, James.
I listen to Patrick McGrid in the morning, mm-hmm. and then I listen to you when I'm driving home. You're really entertaining. You guys really helped me out spiritually, you know. Oh, so I don't usually
God
call
bless
into
you.
These shows. I don't usually call into these shows, but when I heard the testimonies and everything, I go, you know what? God was calling me. He told me, I felt like I wanted to call in and share my situation that I had many years ago. See, I was raised Baptist growing up, you know, Southern Baptist, had Southern parents and everything. And later on in life, I married a Catholic, and then we, my wife, Margaret, and we went to church for many years, and I kind of, at first, I had to get used to it, you know, and, you know, because it's different, you know, so many years I went, and I go, you know what, I really love the Catholic Church, I think I'm going to go and become a Catholic, and I kind of kicked that can down the road for many years, you know.
Okay.
So, so I got complacent. So one time when I was working on my job, I was at a customer's house. I was in their side yard, and the guy says, "Hey, you've got like a spider on your ear or something." And I go, "Really?" And then I felt back there, and it was like a black bump, you know, like,
oh my goodness.
So I went to the doc. And the doc looked at it and goes, well, we'll see what happens with it. And then it didn't go away, got a little bit bigger. So I went to the dermatologist. They did a punch biopsy on it. And then I was at work. And whenever you hear this sentence, you better sit down. You better sit down.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
You better sit down. So she told me, well, we got your biopsy in your ear, and it looks like you have melanoma. And I go, melanoma? And I go, and I knew that was like one of the most aggressive types of cancer, skin cancers and stuff. So my heart just sunk in my chest. I was like, my stomach was like, and it's like, wow, now reality hits, you know? So I ended up going, you know, to the doctor and getting everything. And within this, within this time of me finding out that I was ready, you know, I don't know if I'm gonna live past this, because when you have the C word there, it's like you don't know what's gonna happen, you know. And I never thought it would happen to me, because I was like, okay, I'm bulletproof, you know.
Right.
So then I went. So we went and got the, you know, and finally got the surgery and everything, and. And then,
how did this impact your faith journey?
I had to wait. Well, you know what? To tell you the truth, I didn't have a lot of faith, and I've always like struggled with that throughout my life, is the faith thing. So as I was going through this, I'm sitting in my bedroom and I'm looking. My wife's looking at me, and I'm all depressed. She goes, she looks at my face, and she says, "I'm looking at a man with low." Hardly any faith. And it kind of hit me. It's like, yeah. And so she got me this little block thing to put in my room. And it says, let your faith be bigger than your fear.
Wow.
So that kind of, I still have that in my bedroom. Every morning I wake up, I look at that, you know? So yeah. I decided, you know what? I want to become Catholic, because I don't know how long I'm going to be on this planet. And I want to get my life straight, right? So I went ahead and I went to my priest in my local church, and he set me up to RCIA. And then from there on, I'm going to tell you something. My life changed. I was in one direction, and then all of a sudden, I'm in RCIA. I'm meeting people that I'd never knew before. One of my nuns there, we good friends and everything, and I got involved with all these people going to RCIA. And I want to tell you something. My wife is a cradle Catholic, but we would go to RCIA every week, you know. And I invited her one week because of the matrimony thing, you know. And I'm telling you something. She didn't want to stop going. She wanted to go every week.
That happens a lot to people in RCIA, James. Yeah, it's amazing how RCIA is great for the sponsors and other people who come and take in the classes, just as it is for those who are coming into the church. It's often a great refresher, and I think we all need it at some level. It's like a Catholicism 101 course, and having been involved with RCIA myself a lot in the past, teaching it, I know how that works, absolutely. So it was a refresher for her as well. And
What about now, James? Are you cancer-free now?
Yes, I am cancer-free, and but I still go. I get checkups every once in a while.
Absolutely.
To make sure for the skin. And I make sure that I cover myself up and everything.
Yeah, that's really important. Really important. I've had relatives who have had melanoma as well. And yeah, it's really important to take all the precautions you can, for sure. And James, hey, listen, I'm so thankful that you called in to share. And I'm glad that Patrick Madrid and I can kind of bookend your day every day as you're driving into work and coming home as well. We're glad to be companions with you on the journey of your faith. And thanks for all the kind words you said about Relevant Radio. It really means a lot to us. And thanks for listening and calling in, James. I really appreciate that.
Thank you for accepting my phone call, and God bless you guys.
God bless you.
Really good service for every way. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Please pray for us. We'll pray for you and call back anytime, James. Really appreciate you. That was James from Long Beach, California, calling in. What a great phone call there. That's so encouraging in so many ways to hear that. And yeah, I think just wrapping this up, this whole topic of how does, you know, having a serious diagnosis, a health scare, facing death, how does that change your outlook and your faith? And one of the things that Tim Keller said, one of the last things he said in his article in the Atlantic magazine, was that since he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, he and his wife have come to see something very important. And I think it's something that we can all take to heart as well. He says, the more that we tried to make a heaven out of this world, the more that we tried to ground our comfort and security in this world, the less we were able to enjoy our lives in this world. He talks about going on vacation with his wife, and his wife loves going on vacation. But what always bothered her about it was that as soon as she got there to whatever destination they were going to, she was feeling bad because she knew it was going to end. Even if they just arrived, she knew she was going to have to go back home in a few days, and that would kind of ruin the experience for her. And Tim was kind of a workaholic. He's always thinking about his next book, the next thing he's going to write. And he couldn't really enjoy the vacation because he's thinking about going back to work. And so neither one of them learned how to savor the moment. And so they never actually got refreshed from these vacations. And he starts talking about Yoda, the words of Yoda. You know, when Yoda says, all his life he has looked away to the future, the horizon, never his mind on where he was. That's my Yoda voice for you there. And so this is it, to have our faith and the certainty of the afterlife, of the resurrection, impact your present to the point where you can see God in the everyday and find joy, his presence in the simplest things. And he talks about just seeing the sun on the water, the embrace of his wife, seeing flowers in a vase, simple things, conversations that can bring a lot of joy. And that's really taken him by surprise. And the less he has tried to attempt to make this world into his heaven, the more paradoxically he's been able to enjoy life in this world, enjoy God in this world. And that's a really interesting perspective. And so he can actually say now, in the face of this diagnosis and its aftermath, how it's forced him to reexamine his faith, he's never had more joy. He's never been happier, never had more comfort, even in the face of a lot of grief that's come along with it too. So it's very real. I thought there was a real article, and from somebody who has spent so much time trying to reach secular people with the claims of Christ and the gospel, for him to go through that and grow in his faith in a new way through this experience, I think that's comforting for everybody, because at some time or another, we are going to face an existential challenge to our faith. It's our own suffering, the suffering of someone we love. And Lent is a good time to think about that and to re-examine why we believe what we do. And it's really important that we can explain it to not only other people, but to ourselves as well, because these are truths that we need to hang on to, the reality of the Christ. And we're going to have a great guest on the show tomorrow, just to set things up for tomorrow. Father Patrick Briscoe, who is a Dominican friar, and the co-host of Godsplaining, which is an incredible podcast about how to explain and defend the faith, which is very much what we try to do here on the Cale Clark Show as well, is going to be my guest tomorrow, so you're not going to want to miss that. So thank you for joining me today. Lucas Holt produced, Karen Moran works social media, and Patrick Alog screened the calls, used that friendly voice on the other end of the phone. And we will all be back tomorrow on the Cale Clark Show. Timory is up next, so don't go away. Keep the dial locked in to Relevant Radio. Thanks for joining me today. Take it away, Michaela.